Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Thank you for tuning in, everyone, to the Locker Talk podcast on the Bassin News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I am your proud host, Barry Bonds, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you guys can always reach out to me at any one of my social handles on Twitter at Locker_Report, Facebook, LockReport.com, and also you can tune in on Facebook and the Locker Talk podcast, and on Instagram, LockReport100, all small caps, or you can simply shoot me an email directly at BarryBonds@Locker-Report.com. Well, a whole lot of stuff to get to. I hope everyone is safe at their places of comfort, where you're at home, where you're at work, or on your travels. I want to thank you taking your time out to hear what goes on within the world of sports, mainly in the NFL. I like to say with the NFL, within the NFL. So anything that you would like to hear about the NFL that you don't really hear mainstream, this is the show to always tune in. And as you can tell, as usual, I'm always excited to talk about what I talk about in regards of the NFL, knowing dealing with strictly with the NFL Regional Combine platform. And for the past several weeks, we've been getting a pre-look of some small school players to watch out for heading into the 2021 NFL season. So this is more of a preseason look, but I call it preseason, but it's a pre-look. Some guys to look forward to before the collegiate season starts. And I know in the midst of the pandemic with the coronavirus, I know there are some changes that's being made with major conferences, football, and all our platforms of professional sports, period. But this year is going to be a very special year, I would say more of a unique way of evaluating, knowing that some conferences will play within their conference, not going to be a lot of traveling, and then some conferences are going to postpone their fall sports until the spring. So, and that includes football. We're going to get into that, into the show. However, for the past several weeks, we talked about giving a pre-look of some players that could get invited to the NFL Regional Combine Invitational in 2021. NFL football operations have their own process of selecting players who they want to invite to this special workout. And this workout is predicated to small schools, you know, primarily for the FCS. You know, you have some FBS players that get there in Division II or III, you know, but it's mainly set up for those small school guys to get overlooked. And there were but there were many names that I mentioned of players to watch out for. Not saying that these players will be invited, but with their play on the field, building up through their collegiate career, how they enter into their senior year, as these guys may have an opportunity to get invited, and hopefully they will get invited because their skill set wants it. And so I talked about everybody from the quarterbacks, all position players with those schools. Now we're going to shift to the nuts and bolts of the evaluation process, as now we're ready to start focusing on the HBCU players. Now the HBCU players are no different from the players that's playing in the Division I and Division II. There are a lot of variables with the players going to HBCU schools in a lot of situations, but at the same time, it's a very powerful community, a powerful brand that has not been given their due as far as of evaluating. Now, just to give a little bit of context and talk about the HBCU community when it comes down in terms of football. All the way dating back to pretty much the 1948, but sticking with, you know, the 60s and 70s, especially during a time when there was no integration, when this country desperately needed integration. So all the African-American players that were highly talented went to the HBCU schools to play football, to play their sports. And during that time when there was the major schools was playing, you had HBCU playing players, and that brand actually can compete with your Alabamas and your Notre Dames of the world during that period of time. The NFL looked to the HBCU platforms to help build, or I would say, like to say, save the league, so to speak, with the talented players. And with that being said, the NFL had a fruitful, glorious years of HBCU players filling NFL rosters, and then the NFL went to higher heights. Then that's when integration, which this country desperately needed at a particular time, and it was finally established, and this country have gotten better for it. We still have a long way to go, but the platform and the trail had already been set. And so with integration, African-American players were able to go to the white schools, go to the big-time programs where they had the money, where they had the facilities. They had everything to make these players better to be ready for the next level. And when these players, these African-American players that would have gone to these HBCU schools, no question about it, wind up going to schools that had better funding, better facilities, money always being like a major pipeline. And then in essence, when their big blue bloods in football got better, the NFL got better. And then over the years, when although the NFL draft, you know, was about 12 rounds long, so there was more opportunities for players to get picked, then it started to shrink down to 7. Then it was less players being picked. And when there's less players being picked, that had a lot to do with it as well. But most importantly, all our big-time African-American players went to these large schools. And with that happening, the HBCU relationship with the NFL, far as players on the field, dipped dramatically. And just to give a little context about the HBCU product in the NFL, that since going back to 2017, an average of 30 players, filled rosters of players in the NFL that averaged over 1,600 players. Now, over 1,600 players in the NFL, an average of 30 HBCU players were on NFL rosters. Now, that's unheard of, despicable, should not be tolerated, and it should not be the norm, but unfortunately, it is. And that's something that has to change. And when we look at situations dealing with the HBCU, and today we will talk about some offensive players, a pre-look on offensive players from the HBCU players. I may won't get to all the names today, but during the next couple of weeks, we're going to emphasize and talk about these players because they need it. Frankly, they need it. NFL scouts do a fantastic job. This is why the NFL product on the field is so great. But at the same time, they cannot get to everyone. And so, essence, here come NFL football operations. Now, a little bit of context with football operations. Now, you guys hear me talk about them all the time because they're the ones that help invest into the NFL Regional Combine platform going back to 2012. Now, since 2012, due to the platform for the NFL Regional Combine, over 300 players over were able to sign with an NFL team at some capacity. So this is about over 300 players that chances are they probably would not have had an opportunity to play in the NFL. Adam Thielen, he's one of them. Minnesota Vikings, all-pro wide receiver. Johnny Hecker, one of the best punters in the NFL for the Los Angeles Rams. Greg Zuerlein, coming through that platform as well. And Alejandro Villanueva, left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers, came through that same pipeline. Kamar Grouchet-Hill, linebacker, Miami Dolphins, came through that process. Jotavius Brown, linebacker for Atlanta for the Eagles, came through that process. Kenny Moore II, cornerback for the Indianapolis Colts, came through that process, and the list goes on and on. So it only made sense that if this platform was so successful for your small schools, why not have one for the HBCU Combine, on the HBCU platform. Now, in light of what's going on in our country with the police brutality, with unfortunate, you know, black men, African American men dying in the hands of police officers. We know that this country is in a major crisis as racism is prominent in this in this country. And so this is something that a country thing has to get involved in. And with this year, this past year, due to the coronavirus, the NFL Regional Combine Invitational, and most importantly, the HBCU Combine, they both were canceled. This was going to be the first year for the HBCU Combine platform to finally take place. And in light of what's going on, the first thing that most of you guys probably would say to yourself would think, wow, the NFL finally going to do something for HBCU. Wow, how convenient. But that's not the truth. I will go on to say this. With NFL football operations, Troy Vincent has been the spearhead of this. And when I'm talking about Troy Vincent, he's the executive vice president of football operations for the NFL. Troy Vincent had been in the forefront, really, really grinding to make the HBCU brand prevalent in the NFL once again. Now, knowing with his relationship with the front office, knowing that he himself have a lot of connections. Now, you would think for as important this is for him and how it's dear to his heart, you would think that he went to HBCU school, but he did not. He actually went to Wisconsin. He was an All-American, got drafted in the first round. He is a legend in Philadelphia. You know, to me, you know, I think he's borderline Hall of Fame player. 5-time All-Pro, you know, you can play for a long time in the NFL. You probably won't become an All-Pro not once. He was able to do it 5 times. With him talking to the legends of the NFL, player engagement, with his colleagues that played in the league, having his ear, Mr. Vincent had surrounded himself with intelligent people on this matter and knew that this was something that the league had to do. And he recognized and know that these scouts are very talented and they're great at what they do, but they need some help. They need a platform. And he know that, and he knew that that the HBCU community needed something that was going to cater to them. Now, if you guys ever have an opportunity to go to operations.nfl.com and click on the efforts with HBCU efforts, pull that up. You will see back in 2016, this is when things, even before that, things was put in place, and that's when they kind of went public with their initiatives for the HBCU. And one of the ones they had, even all the way back in 2016, they knew they was going to get this regional, get this combine for the HBCU players. And if you go and read that statement, they have a lot of things that's catered to the HBCU platform with things they had established, but I'm just going to focus on the combine. And it reads, with an objective to provide exposure, mentorship, and development opportunities for HBCU prospects, the NFL created an inaugural HBCU Combine in 2020. HBCU athletes have the opportunity to showcase their talents both in the classroom and on the field. Through this combine, HBCU athletes experience a world-class on-field evaluation by NFL scouts. In addition, NFL legends and club personnel network with these athletes of color and drive awareness of opportunities to be involved in professional football beyond the playing field. These are intentional efforts to bring awareness about opportunities for the students of color. So this has been something that has been his heartbeat for the past several years. This year, we did not have it, unfortunately, because of the situation that the country is facing, but he's looking to be on track next year for the workouts, which means that it's very important to really focus on the HBCU platform heading into the 2021 season, knowing some of the changes due to coronavirus, how some of these conferences are going to play out. We're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things, what's going on within the HBCU community, dealing with their conferences, with their schools, and with their players, knowing that there will be some cancellations. The major schools don't have the issue or the problem to go forward in having a season, although they're making some alterations. but because of funding and situations dealing with the HBCU institutions, they're not prevalent to this situation. But when we get back, we're going to talk about why, but most importantly, we're going to give a pre-look at some offensive players to watch out for. You listen to Locker Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
If you want real discussions on politics, social issues, racial issues, and other topics, then tune into the Bachelor News Radio Show. Listen live every Monday and Thursday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern at blogtalkradio.com. And if you miss the show, you can listen every Monday through Saturday at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. Eastern, and every Sunday at 5 a.m. and 3 p.m. at thebachelornews.airtime.pro. Listen and be informed.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back to Locker Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you guys can always reach out to me at any one of my social handles on Twitter at Locker_Report, on Instagram, LockReport100, all small caps, Facebook, LockReport.com, and also make sure you check out everything that's on Locker Talk podcast that's on Facebook. Now, with this network is growing, getting stronger, talking about all kinds of issues in regard to the world, whether it's social matters, politics, entertainment, you know, health, anything you can think of, this network has it. And one of the great shows that we definitely have on here, make sure you tune in on Tuesdays. You and the Law Show with Keith Humphreys and Chief Virgil Green. The show is about having an open and honest conversation with America about law enforcement and their relationships with black and brown communities. Listen every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. And if you guys ever interested in probably having a show or want to advertise, most importantly, make sure you shoot an email at labachelor40@gmail.com. And that's spelled labachelor40@gmail.com. So make sure you guys reach out if there's any questions, anything. We're definitely there to help out. LA is fantastic owner of the network, so he is definitely respond to you. Now, pre-look for HBCU players, talking about the offense. Now, we know there will be some changes. Now, we know going into this season that the CIAA and the SIAC, they're going to suspend their fall sports for this year. Now, they didn't say they're going to cancel, they're going to suspend it. And so they may pick it up in the spring. Football, of course, we know is a fall sport, so we're going to see if you know what's going to happen as with football-wise. But in essence of that, we know that these players are going to take a hit. And if they wind up having to play in the spring, we know it's going to interfere with the workouts around that time. So it's going to be very interesting, so make sure you stay tuned and stay posted with that. We have definitely had some teams moving from one conference to another. The MEAC is taking a hit with a couple of teams moving to the SWAC. We'll get into that probably next week, you know, talk a little bit more about that. But today, knowing what the changes with the HBCU community falls with their suspensions, it's even more prevalent that these players, these talented players that are out there, that's going to be affected by this, knowing that the NFL timetable is not going to necessarily change. From right now, everything is going to be still moving and progressing. And when the evaluation process starting now, but when they get to the draft time and when the combine and Indy kicks off next February, no telling how the playing season for most HBCU schools going to be. So it's very important that these players get the due that they need so that these scouts can have a radar on who to watch out for, but most importantly, have it set up where these players possibly could be invited to the HBCU combine where their lives can be changed and put the emphasis on this brand. Now, this year, there were 9 players. One player, Jotavius Simmons, offensive lineman for Tennessee State. He was the only HBCU player that was drafted this year, and 8 other players signed from the HBCU. So that's 9, the same number of players from last year. Now, they were signed. No, there were no OTAs or nothing like that, so no one was cut. So going into training camp, which will open up in a couple of weeks, that's when we're going to start the monitor to see how many, will all nine of these players make it on and stay on these rosters going into the 2020 season. But right now, we're going to talk about the 2021 season. Players to watch out for, because the talent is out there. Just have to really take the initiative to find those players. And here on Locker Talk and through locker-report.com, we're going to do our diligence with that. Now, let's get some tunes rocking. I'm ready to get down, talk about some players. We're going to start with the quarterbacks. Hey, not a lot of them. Don't get it twisted. Not a lot of them, even with small schools. Not going to make it a big thing saying, oh, there's a lot of players, you know, there's going to be overlooked. I mean, that's out there to play in the NFL. No, that's not the case. But there are some that can. And starting with the quarterbacks, Akil Glass, Alabama, A&M. This dude is big. 6'5", 225 pounds. Now, I would say that this young man is a complete traditional signal caller. This young man stands tall in the pocket. He have a solid deep, he's a solid deep ball thrower with touch. So he can make that ball fly and a drop. The perfect, like almost like a loaf of bread or manna from heaven right into the pass catcher's hands. He have quick hands. He is actually a play action specialist in terms of shifting the ball. The way he handles that ball when he's faking it to the running back or to the receiver, a lot of times nobody don't even really know he still has the ball, but he's so good at it. Quick hands, he's a master with that. He's physically sound, meaning that his stature is very strong. He's not going to be easy to take down. He have good pocket presence, mechanics, high IQ. He's very, very smart with the ball. He's not going to force nothing that's not there. If nothing is there, he's going to throw it away. Pretty much have that intellect of knowing how to protect his team and not put his team or his defense in a situation where they're going to be hard for him to get out of. He protects the ball very well. Now, he's not the fastest guy, but he's quick enough to get to the spots where he needs. So it shows that he has awareness and his vision is very good. He throws his robbers, he throws his pass catchers open. Man, he's leading the right direction. He has the passes, how his passes will talk to his pass catchers, how he knows that if he send it out a little further, they can run. Nobody's going to get to him. If the ball is thrown behind him, he knows it's not going to be a catchable ball. It's going to be dangerous. If it goes right to that chest, catch the ball, go down because you're going to get hit. He has those three types of communicated balls. Manipulates the pocket very well. He throws on a rope. Quick release, very patient, go through all his progressions, read coverages very well. He's strong, and he's deliberate with the ball. He knows where he's going at, and he do not hesitate. Very passionate. He is a true born leader. So, Akil Glass, Alabama, A&M, watch out for this young man. Felix Harper from Alcorn State, 6 foot, 190 pounds. He is a pure athlete. He's electric. Mobile, agile. His skill set actually fits today's NFL. With all these mobile quarterbacks you have in the league now, they're showing, you know, really excitement with Lamar Jackson's and then your Cam Newton's, Deshaun Watson's. His skill set right now fits today's NFL. He's very elusive, very quick, and he, despite his escapability, he can pretty much run and escape anyone or any defenses anytime he wants to because he have that talent. But despite having that, he will stay in that pocket and he will try to make a play with his arm. That's something that I hope that he gets credit for. He's definitely getting credit here on the Locker Talk podcast. He reads defenses well, schemes very well, has solid speed for his position, processes very well, very quickly. This young man can pick up a playbook really fast and learn it and be ready to get out there on the field and play. That's something that you definitely want your young quarterback to have. He's a student of the game, very intense, high IQ. He know when to make, now this is very important, he know when to make the right adjustments in Audubon on the offensive line. He does an exceptional job with that. He have a good touch on his deep ball. He can throw on the run, both left and his right. So there's no situation that you say, well, force it to his left, make him throw a bad pass on the run, or force it to his right, he's going to make a bad pass on the run. No, left and right, he can throw on the run. Have good twitch, and he throws with his hips. When he throws his hips, it's always in it. Love it. Great fundamentals and mechanics. Felix Harper from Alcorn State. Now, another young man is very interesting here. Cameron Rosenthal from Tennessee State. Now, Tennessee State has been a hot program for the past couple of years, getting players into the NFL. Chris Rowland was one of those players from Tennessee State that signed within the NFL club this year. 6'2", 210 pounds. I really like this guy. He's really good. Now, it's going to be really difficult. I ain't going to say difficult. That's too strong. But this year may be more of a little challenge for him, knowing that his quarterback coach, Jatavius Jackson, who I was a big fan of when he was in the NFL, when he bounced around the Seahawks and Minnesota Vikings, he died in a tragic car accident. And I know that his relationship with Jackson, Rosenthal's relationship with Jackson, was very strong. So I know he's going into this season with a heavy heart. But with this heavy heart, this young man have the tools to get in front of scouts to show that he belongs having a shot to get into the NFL. He gets the ball out very quick. He reads through his progressions quickly. It's not one of those situations where he looked here and he looked there and he looked there. It's more like bam, 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 and then decisive decision making and getting the ball out to the right pass catcher that he sees. So he has solid vision, solid awareness, very mobile. He's a solid pocket quarterback. He will scramble if he has to, but he won't. But if he see a lane that's there or he don't see nothing down the field, just like Akil, he will throw the ball away, not put his offense in a bad situation, not make it difficult for his defense. He will throw it away, make the right decision. I really, really like that. He has a strong arm. Throws another one. Throws the deep ball very well with touch. He is fantastic against zone coverages. Very solid in that area. His mechanics in the pocket is very, very good. His footwork, very solid. He throws his receivers open as well. Very disciplined. Very patient, smart leader, and he's an aggressive passer. That's another thing that I like about him a lot, too. So, Rosenthal, if you listen to this this recording, this show, hang in there. I know Jackson meant a lot to you. He meant a lot to the NFL community. Also, was a big fan of his and to stand strong. I believe you're going to have a great season, young man. Another player notable to watch out for, Jaquan Carter from Norfolk State. 6 foot, 180 pounds. A little on the light side. But this young man is a leader to watch out for as far as notable-wise. Now we're going to jump into the running backs. Running backs. Jermaine Martin from North Carolina State A&T. Boy, this kid with a smile on my face. 5'10", 203 pounds. He is, when I say great between the tackles, great in traffic, yes, this young man is that. Very shifty, explosive. He has breakaway speed. Very patient. He followed his blockers very well. He does not under any circumstances, hesitate when it's time for him to hit the hole. He has great feet, great hands, solid stop, start, and go. Great comeback speed. Actually, better yet, he has great speed getting around to the edges. If he gets to the outside, folks, you might as well just kiss it goodbye. Kiss him goodbye. He's very strong. Has great balance and control, solid pad level, knowing that he's not going to take no hard shots up the top. He's going to get his pad level low enough to make sure he don't absorb no major hits. He will take a big hit if it means something. He's not going to put his body in a situation where he's going to get pounded on all the time. He has balance. He also can handle the pressure in carrying the load for a team. So if you think that coming in, this young man can't carry the ball 25 times a game or 30 times a game for the sake of the team, this young man can definitely do so. So with that being said, next week we're going to pick up and we're going to finish talking about the running backs. We're going to get into some pass catchers and talk about some offensive linemen. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show with Locker Talk. Make sure you guys tune in on Bachelor News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow, today, and also Bachelor.Airtime Pro. Make sure you guys tune into that. Also, you can always go to Locker Talk Podcast on Facebook to catch out the videos on Twitter, Locker-Report, on Instagram, Lock Report 100, all small caps. So make sure you guys follow. Make sure you guys tune in next week. We're going to talk about some more HBCU players because, folks, HBCU football matters. Make sure you get it out there. HBCU football matters. These young men need an opportunity. They earned this opportunity, and these guys should get in some scouts, and hopefully, and prayerfully, they will get invited to the HBCU Combine. I'm Barry Bonds, founder, CEO of LockerDashReport.com. Everyone stay blessed and be safe.
Everyone, and welcome to Live with Liza, where I air every Friday mornings at 9:30 in the morning Eastern Standard Time, and I rebroadcast weekly at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at thetime.pro. Today I want to talk about what's going on in law enforcement around our country, and I'm hoping to have on some guests that work in law enforcement. One of our local sheriffs will be here later on in the show to discuss what he sees to come on in the future in our city and, you know, how he feels about stuff that's going on. As I watched the news, and I know a lot of people are talking about how we should defund the police and take action against the police. I really think people are not really thinking this through. I think a lot of it is a lot of people are letting their personal feelings get into what can be a bad outcome. We do need police officers. They have training. True, they need better training, and they need to kind of not be as aggressive during some of the stuff that they come up on. Like, if you know it's a traffic stop, nobody should be killed in a traffic stop. If you know that you have just different things going on, like different types of, not really crimes, but just things that happen that the police come out that are not worthy of anybody getting killed. Like this morning I was watching on the news the young lady who her and her boyfriend were in their own home and were killed on because it was a mistake. So we just need to really talk about, well, I want to really talk about the stuff that goes on with our police and what's going to happen, like what happened in Atlanta where the police called out. How do we as citizens, how can we even feel safe, and what can we do to make those things better for us in our community? Because I feel if I call 911, I want them to come. I mean, I pay tax dollars just like they pay tax dollars as well. They don't work for free. I want them to be able to respond, since I might not have the gun, the ammunition, the stuff that they have to protect me. So I also was watching a video on YouTube that happened in Hillsborough, North Carolina, where a lady was committing some actions against a food line, and she even assaulted a food line employee. And I heard in the video where one of the ladies recording was like, "Where's the police? We don't call them. We don't call them. Where are they?" I mean, you think about it. I was wondering, did they defund the police in Orange County, or did something happen that they didn't respond as quickly to that incident that was going on there? We just don't realize how important, a lot of people don't realize how important police presence is in our communities, in our cities, in our states. I cannot imagine living in Atlanta right now and knowing that if I call 911, they're not going to come. So whose safety is being jeopardized? And I read up on stuff and I try to fact check. And again, if you guys want to call in, please do so and share your thoughts on the situation. And the number to call in is 646-629-0130. And just let the producer know you would like to make a comment. Again, you know, I see a lot of the stuff on the news that talks about, you know, all the stuff that's going on with the police departments. And, you know, I call around and I question some of the agencies. And I even spoke to an officer yesterday while I was at work that happened to come by. And I was telling him, he's a deputy here in our city, And I was telling them that you know, we need to, I was asking how he felt about police presence in the school system. And me working in the school system, I wonder, you know, why so many people have said and that they don't want the police officers in the school system. And I feel that we need them there. I mean, I think since I've been here in North Carolina, there's always been, again, if you want to comment, the number is 646-929-0130. I think I might have said it wrong before, but again, if you want to comment, the number is 646-929-0130. But I was also thinking about, speaking to the officer yesterday, that, you know, why would you want to take police presence out of the school system? That's like a disaster. I heard a young lady on the news say we needed more nurses, but why don't we just train everybody in the school system around our nation, across, you know, across our state, that everybody should have CPR and first aid training. And if we have an active shooter, the police will be there to take care of that person. And we know that those have been common over the years, and a lot of people have lost their lives. And so I just, you know, I feel that I don't want the police presence not to be in our school system, being an educator and still having students that I know and my children still go to school. But that's a discussion that I hope to have another day. I have Chief Virgil Green on the phone with me or on the line, and I hope that he can bring some light to some of the stuff that we have going on throughout our nation, you know, our states right now.
Well, this is Chief Humphrey. How are you doing, Liza?
It was Chief Green. How are you doing?
No, I'm doing fine.
Okay.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, and I'll take either one of you guys because I had asked to have y'all on the show this morning just to get y'all point of view on all the stuff that's going on and how some police departments are not showing up for work. And, you know, they have a lot of you have a lot of angry police officers just like you have civilians. And, you know, what say you about what's going on in Atlanta with the police not going to work?
Yeah, thank you, Liza, for it. This is a bad time to be a police officer. It's also a good time to be a police officer, if I may say that. It is an opportunity for young men and young women to get in and make a change. I'm so proud to see a lot of our young black men and women standing up for a cause. And that's what we need in law enforcement right now. We need that change, and we need people to come in and demand change inside the law enforcement agency. But what's going on right now is that policing is considered a brotherhood and a sisterhood. And so we get in our feelings. I was having a conversation last night with some people about getting in your feelings, and we get in our feelings when things occur. And so when we want police chiefs, we want leadership, we want change. We don't like change, but we'll accept change. But then when you make those decisions, you know, you're hired as a police chief, and when you make a decision regarding someone's job, or, you know, someone's discipline up to the level of termination, when you make a statement that you feel as though that could have been handled differently, and it could have, and it may also, you know, could have been handled differently, the line officers feel as though you are turning against them and throwing them to the wolves. They don't recognize that you have a job to do. Now, not all of them. Some don't recognize it as a chief. You have a job to do. You're hired to make those decisions, and a lot of times they're not going to be popular decisions. But you have to make the decision that you feel is in the best interest of the community. And it doesn't mean that you're throwing them under the bus. And that's what the officers in Atlanta are saying. That's what the officers in Florida are saying, Buffalo, New York. They believe that when you have these type of incidents that are occurring in the nation, when they take the type of action that they do, you should support them no matter what. And I disagree with that. If it's wrong, it's wrong. And that's what's going on. They get in their feelings, and they believe that you're throwing them to the wolves. And if I may, not to belabor on it, but what happens is they feel like it's more political than administrative.
I'm going to hold you up right there for a second. I'm going to go ahead and take this break right quick, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit, you know, continue the conversation, because I have some other guests that will be coming on. But you're listening to Live with Liza on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
Greetings and great day, everyone. I am Elder Janelle Strickland, host of the Life Cafe radio broadcast from Maximizing Life Family Worship Center. I invite you to tune in every Saturday from 5 to 6 p.m. Tune in, maximize your life with the Word of God, and be blessed. Only on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feel fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy, from the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rush, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling snotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
You're listening to Live with Liza on the Bachelor News Radio Network, and we're going to continue to talk to G. Virgil Green, I believe, and they air a show called Jew and the Law with the co-host of Chief Keith Humphrey as well, and it airs on Tuesdays, every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time at blogtalkradio.com/LA Bachelor, and you can also call in to listen to them at 646-929-0130, and they rebroadcast at 4 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time after that every day on the bachelornews.airtime.pro. Welcome back, Chief. I was just we were just talking about the situation that's going on in different cities about the police quitting or not going into work, and, you know, your thought feelings on that. I also like to point out that I feel that while I understand that they are the ones that decided that they didn't want to go to work because they do feel threatened, that it wasn't really the police department that's filing the charges. All this goes through the court system, and the, you know, these are the people that they need to, again, I go back to who you vote into the system. You know, I don't feel that it's the chief or the head of them that's making the decisions as far as pressing charges on them and making it where they don't come to work. You guys, as being officers yourself and being up in ranks, how do you keep the momentum in your area to keep the officers content and feel safe themselves?
Well, it's hard. It's not easy right now during these times, Liza. And one of the things, and let me, you're absolutely right that it's not, there's a three-pronged fork when it comes to criminal justice, and it's law enforcement, judicial, and detention. And all three of those are separate entities. They work together, but they're separate entities that affect an individual or a case. And so what's happening, Liza, is the officers feel as though the city official, local government officials are throwing them under the bus. And they believe that the chief should have that decision on whether to fire someone immediately, but they feel as though the chief is getting pressure from the mayor or whomever hired them to make that decision. And so they feel like the due process of the officers, that we're giving suspects due process, but we're not getting due process that we've earned in these situations. And it's a double-edged sword, if I may just really quickly. It's a double-edged sword. There is a due process for when an officer commits a violation or when they get involved in a shooting or any kind of any other type of use of force. There is a due process. But in these last few incidents, we see that mayors and police chiefs have taken immediate action. And that's what the officers are mad about. They're like, we didn't get our due process. We're automatically accused of being. I'm not talking about the deal in Minneapolis. I'm talking about other deals throughout the city.
Right,
so they feel as though
general.
They're not getting their due process,
right,
and they're
general.
Being thrown under the bus based on political and national pressure.
And I can see that. I mean, and that can be in any job. And people don't realize that it's just a work environment that people get thrown under the bus or under the cars or, you know, ratted out and stuff like that. It's just that people, I think when it comes to right now, the way that, and I have a young son that wants to go into, you know, into law. He wants to go into the criminal law type of job and stuff, and he's just getting out of high school. And my fear for him as a mother is when he gets out there, what's going to happen. And he's a black young man. And I know, like, I have at 10 o'clock, hopefully, I think he'll be calling in. It's our local sheriff here, Sheriff Ennis, right? And he's a black officer here, and I know that as being African American and working in law enforcement, it's almost like I feel y'all have it like even it's going to be even worse because you have to try to appease the white community and the black community. Because I've noticed even with my friends that are white, I've noticed one of them was talking to me yesterday. They had a friend for years, their neighbor, a black lady, and after all this stuff started happening, she turned against them. You know, so you're having, it's almost like the police and law enforcement is having to, like, you guys have to try to get everybody's, like, in a median. And it's, I don't see how it's going to happen, how people can really, I guess, the meeting of the minds. You know, you have people that have turned against whites, have turned against blacks because of all the stuff that's happening. And truly, all this stuff has been happening. It's just that now we can capture it on video. You know, now you
that
have more, it is more accessible because I know growing up here, I came from New York, I didn't really know racism in New York till I came down south. So it makes me even wonder now if racism is more a southern thing than from me coming from New York. I mean, I had Jewish friends, Chinese friends, Korean friends, black friends. I'm Hispanic. I had Hispanics of every color. And I get down south, and it's almost like, wow, it's like a twilight zone. And it's just, where do you begin to change that? Everybody's so, you know, like my white friends that was they were talking to me yesterday, and they're my children's godparents. And he was saying that he's like numb right now with everything. And he works at, he has black employees, and they laugh and have good times just in general because it's not the. So you can have, we know this because we've had a black president and a white president. We only had a black president for 8 years. You know, it's been white presidents ever since. But we know that it's not the color of the skin that makes a person. And right now with law enforcement, you guys have it. I mean, I just don't, my heart goes out to all of you guys because I just can't see how to bring them together. It's almost like we have to find that median where everybody brings something to the table and everybody partakes.
Right, right. Well, you got to be consistent with the discussion, Liza. And we don't have these discussions until we have major incidents like George Floyd. And then they stop. And then something else happens. We pick them back up. And then it stops. And then something else happens. So there's no consistency in the way that we have these discussions. There's no consistent platform. We think there are, but they're not until something happens. And
right.
But, you know, and the sad thing about it, people have to die or their lives have to be affected adversely before we do have those discussions. Those discussions should be happening every day.
And this should be in part of the, I feel, I mean, I know you've been in law enforcement many years, and I love that we can talk to you. I enjoy talking to you and listening to your show as well. But it makes me wonder sometimes how do we, I guess maybe if we train differently when it comes to law enforcement and judges and maybe some type of different courses can be given when they, you know, because you have to get educated some type of way. But maybe now, just like somebody was saying, instead of just teaching black history, we can teach all history so that people know where people come from. Like, I believe that everybody has a little bit of racism in them, but that when you go to work, that racism should stay home. If you don't bring the alcohol to work, don't bring the racism. You know, and maybe
right.
Some different type of training as we go forward to better train in, just like we train for violence, it's always been there. You know, but they have different type of trainings. We train for sexual harassment. We train for sex trafficking. There's courses for that. So maybe we need to incorporate better training when it comes to racism, you know, whether it's in the workplace. We have EEOC that covers that part in the workplace, but how do we cover that in our communities?
Well, we have, you know, and what you're talking about is implicit and explicit bias, and everybody has implicit, you know, everybody has a bias towards something. It's the explicit is when you carry out those feelings toward a person because they're different, and that's the concern. There are processes now where we can actually give tests in private where people can actually see what their biases are, if you know how what their level of bias is. so that they can try to address those. Because I can tell you right now, Liza, we got so much training going on, and we've talked about so many different areas of law enforcement and so many different areas of training and so many different areas of concern. But it's the if we can't start changing people, you know, that's the problem. You got to change people from the inside. Because I can give you all the training you want. I can give you I can sit as many minorities in front of you and take you to as many museums as we need to and let you look at as many movies as possible and talk about relationships between law enforcement and the communities of color all day. But if I can't change you, if I can't get you the light to come on, and you already have made up your mind, that's where the problem is. And if we can figure out, we can give all the tests in the world, but if we can't figure out, recognize our problems ourselves, and that if we as police chiefs and police officers, when we observe someone doing something wrong, if we don't step up and say anything, we're not going to change this problem. It's going to continue. It's going to continue as long as we don't acknowledge we've got a problem and try to address the problem internally, not necessarily physically. I mean, you know, outward, but inward. That's the problem. We can't change a person's character. You know, we can dress it up. No, go ahead, Liza.
Yeah, but you're fine. That also goes back to, and like I said, to me, it falls back young, you know, in educating.
Yes.
You know, if I'm in education, and I am in education, I work, you know, I have an associate's in education, working on another one. I've been working with children since 2000. I'm a mom of four. You know, I've watched it. I've been on one side of the fence and the other. And when children grow up, saying, okay, you could have your child at home and not teach them racism, but they can go into a school environment and they can see it. You know, when you see a teacher that's treating a black student better than they treating a white student better than they're treating a black student, it's already starting. It's like a seed. You're planting it. You know, and that's why I talk about, you know, education a lot, because I work in it and I've seen it firsthand. And I'm not talking about years ago. I've seen it up to 2 years ago. And when I said something about it, my director told me, "I don't believe you. I don't believe that happened in the classroom. I don't believe you. Did you not believe me because my black eyes saw it? Had I been a white teacher telling you about a black teacher doing something to a white student, what would you have done? But because my eyes are from a black person and I saw this happening, I saw the segregation in the classroom. I saw where the white students were being treated better. I saw when they sat at lunchtime that all the black kids sat together. And this is elementary. This is not high school. This is in elementary school that I saw this. And I reported it. They didn't do anything. So I think a lot of it is a community thing. You know how you have the police department, you have churches, you have the schools, you have the grocery stores. It's like I had a friend that went to DMV here yesterday, and she said that everybody in that DMV office was a white person. Everybody. There were no blacks at the DMV here in Cumberland County at that place. And she was telling me about it. She said that, you know, she was really like, wow. I went in there and, you know, was taking care of business. And they were sitting there. They were on lockdown for whatever reason, because I know Corona is not meant for the doors to lock, but they were locked down. When she got in the building to take care of her business, they were told that, you know, I mean, they were sitting there just looking at her like whatever. She said they looked like they just were about to take a nap. And that's also one of our community service centers. There were no blacks there. So I think that it's like it has to be a whole thing that people have to partake in. It can't just be the police department. It just can't be the judicial system. It just can't be the education system. It's got to be a whole. Everybody in a whole has to come in. If DMV knows that you have all them in there and they're all white, you need to bring some black people. But we're going to continue our conversation. After this break right here, you're listening to Live with Liza on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
Recovery Month has become widely recognized and does an outstanding job of celebrating recovery, increasing awareness, and acknowledging the amazing work of providers, advocates, people in recovery, and their families. I believe our work together is helping many Americans better understand, seek out, attain, and sustain recovery. What began as a small and very good idea has grown into a national, mainstream, sustained, and systematic public education and support effort, all focused on the message that people recover. Getting the message of recovery right is critical because people take action based on what they hear and see, and most importantly, what they experience. Experience shapes our knowledge, our values, our attitudes, our beliefs, and our action. Of those who recognized their need for treatment but didn't receive care, the number one reason was no health coverage and could not afford the cost. No one in need should be denied the opportunity for treatment and recovery in our country.
Welcome back. You're listening to Live with Liza. I air live every Friday morning at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time and rebroadcast weekly at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at thebachelornewsradio.airtime.pro. Right now you can call in to listen, and the number that you call in is 646-929-0130. And you also have a guest on the show, which he has his own show, which is You and the Law, with co-host Chief Keith Humphrey and Chief Virgil Green, airing every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at theblogtalkradio.com/LA Bachelor and at 646-929-0130. And the rebroadcast of their show is at 4 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every day at thebachelornews.airtime.pro. Welcome back, Chief, and we were going to continue to speak on the situation, and I'm also waiting on my guest to call in. And he is our local sheriff here, and I'm, you know, excited for you to meet him as well. He has been here for a minute, and he's made changes in our area, and I wanted him to kind of discuss what changes he saw going forward that might, you know, happen, and how he feels about the situation that that's going on right now. But as I was saying before we took our break, that I just feel that it's something that has to change, you know, across the table. It's not just something that can change, you know, with one person or the other, or, you know, I just feel that it's something that we have to do across the board. And like you said, you can take different people to different areas and you could try to retrain the mind, but it starts out early. It's just like when we train, you know, our pets or stuff like that, we start them out as puppies and bring them up. So when we see stuff that's going on locally, whether it's in our school system, which really our kids get more schooling than anything, we should be able to speak out, and our voices should be heard. And I believe I have your partner on the phone as well. And I was asking earlier how you felt about what's going on with Atlanta and the call out. And, you know, are you guys prepared for anything like that happening in your area?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every day is preparation. And I think when these type of things occur, you go back and you look at what your current process is, and you always change. Our main focus is going back to more de-escalation, you know, try to meet with the protesters and see what, you know, listen to the demands. And once you listen to the demands, work with and talk about your expectations. You're not going to always agree, but at least there's going to be some dialogue that's taking place. So, yeah, we, you know, I think we're doing a really good job, but, you know, we can always do better.
Well, yeah, and that's called training. Just like in any field of work, there's always updates, there's always training, there's always, you know, redirection. Like, I really don't believe in the defund the police, you know, that it just doesn't make sense for anybody to want to defund the stuff that, you know, that you guys are doing. That's like downplaying that you're law enforcement. You know, that's like,
right. You
know, when other parts of our community get money to do stuff, they don't really – tell them where to use that money at. Yeah, you have to kind of show it later, but I just don't agree with what they're trying to say that, oh, we're going to defund the police department. So basically you're trying to tell them that I'm not going to pay you anymore. So what if you went to work and they told you we're going to take 50 cents away from you because we need to use it somewhere else? It don't matter what kind of work you do. It doesn't matter what your performance is. We're just going to take money out of your budget. And I disagree with that. I just feel that it shouldn't be, you know, that shouldn't even been put up there. Just like somebody told me that, you know, they painted all the Black Lives Matter, and how long is that really going to matter to everybody? Because people continuously continuously look for, you know, once that wears out, that's gone. So we need something that has a lot more impact. You know, paint dries up, cracks up, you know, fades. So we need to put that money towards something more positive that's going to have a bigger impact and a long-lasting impact. And I believe I have Chief Virgil Green on the line as well. How do you feel about
yes.
the situation on hand?
Well, you guys were, I think you just mentioned defunding. And, you know, one of the things I think when you talk about defunding, then you realize that the services that police provide, are that demand is still there. So the demand is not going to decrease. It's going to actually increase. And so when you talk about taking away funding, that's going to have more of an impact on the citizens, just as well as going to have on the police department that the city council members are talking about reallocating funds and putting them somewhere else. But like you said, it's not a good idea, but I don't think the conversation has not been had that, okay, if you defund the police, how does that impact the overall service that the police provide to the community?
Right, and that's what I've been trying. Like when I, you know, you have discussions with friends and stuff like that, and everybody's like, "Oh, well, this is how I feel. This is how that person feels." You know, all that other stuff that they talk about, and I feel that to me, we're not looking at the broad picture. Everybody's so fast to act. You know, I try to like I had to learn in life before I spit my words out to try to chew them a little bit. You know, let them marinate. Because once you say it, that's it. Whether it's politicians, police officers, parents, educators, you know, our voices have a lot of power. We just don't realize that it's how we use it that's going to make it, you know, make it work. And as I watch here in our county and I watch across the board and on the news and on social media and stuff like that, I watch all this going on, and it makes me, you know, it just makes me wonder how do we even fix this? How can we fix it? And it comes out more, like I said earlier, it's been going on for years, lynching, shootings, abuse from everybody, not just law enforcement, but now that we have social media, now everybody's like, wow, I didn't know this was going on, you know. And to defund, people are not realizing if we take money away from you guys, you're just like educators. You don't even get paid the amount of money that you're worth, because you're paid by tax dollars. You're paid by a budget. You know, you didn't start a business and make it big. You chose to service the community. But I just can't really, you know, see what all is going on the way the other people see it. Like all this defund. And then you want to call 911. There was a situation, I don't know if you watched it, here in Orange County where the food line called 911 because a lady ran her car into the food line. And you could hear on the video, they were talking about, where's the police? Why is the police, you know, not on here? I mean, not getting here. But I believe I have our local sheriff here online, and I have Sheriff Ennis.
Yes, ma'am.
Good day. I wanted to talk to you and give you a platform so that you can tell our citizens here in Cumberland County what changes are you doing and how do you feel about what's going on, like in Atlanta. Are you prepared for anything like that to happen in our county, and how will it continue to protect? How will you and our officers continue to protect us?
Well, we're always prepared for incidents there, ma'am. But can I say something about the defunding?
I was listening
to your conversation. And I agree with you. When you start talking about taking away resources from the emergency, you know, services, you know, like you said, you hurt the citizens when you do that. You know, our budgets are tight enough. We put in for things with budget. And as you know, with the sheriff's office, you know, it's up to the county commissioners to approve that budget, you know.
Right.
A lot of times I say that folks that don't work in this line of work or work in this field have no idea what we need when we put in for certain items, you know. We don't put in for things that we don't need, you know. We got to, you know, we started doing a lot of DNA testing, You know, we had to go over and put that out, you know, put in a, just about a fight to get that, you know. But that's something that we need to solve crime. But when you talk about defunding, you hurt the citizens when you talk about defunding. You know, as you say,
right?
We,
and I don't think they realize. I don't think a lot of our citizens, they're so busy following everybody, and you know, they're like, they're following media, they're following the negative part. I mean, I would not vote to defund you guys. I would not vote to. I watch on the news a young lady talking about we don't need officers in the school. No, we need y'all there.
Yes, you do.
Ever since I've been here, I mean, ever since I've been in school in Cumberland County, you guys have been there. So
yeah.
I disagree totally with that. We need more CPR and first aid. You know, we do need more of that.
Right.
I can't see, and I know y'all DNA kit. I think y'all solved the old rapist case on Ramsey Street.
We solved the baby case.
And people need to realize that that's something that you guys did with, you know, and that's great. But I disagree totally with defunding, and you know, I wanted you to come on and discuss that as well as just the how are you preparing our county for so much that's out there? And you being a black sheriff and having to deal with, you know, some black people saying, hey, you want us, or, you know, what you doing, or stuff like that. Because I think that you guys, and I have two other law enforcement from other states on the line sharing their point of view. How do you react to that? Because, I mean, you've been awesome since I've seen you, you know, in office.
You know, what I tell people first, yes, I'm black, but I'm the sheriff. And I tell folks, I'm the sheriff for the citizen of all citizens, you know, black or white. I'm the sheriff for Cumberland County. I don't distinct how the law is administered to people. The law is one straight. To me, there's no difference between someone having money and someone not having money. Everybody's treated the same. Everybody's treated fair. So, when you know, I told someone before, you know, as a minority law enforcement officer, you know, we catch it from both sides. But we're used to that, you know, and as long as you, like I told the folks the other night, I treat people the way I want to be treated. I treat these citizens that way. So at nighttime when I go home, I can put my head on my pillow and know I have not mistreated anyone out here. So, but the citizens of this county and department that I have, the sheriff's office I have some good officers here. And we work with what we have here. A lot of times, just like we were talking about defunding, a lot of the equipment that we get, we use my fortune money a lot of times to get equipment that we can't get, you know, the commissioners don't approve for. So the citizens are taking care here, and the officers. You know, I always tell people, law enforcement is a calling. If you, just like I told one class one time, I said, look at these officers here. These officers don't know nothing about you, but they're willing to put their life on the line for you. Don't know what, no, nothing about you, but that's something they're willing to do.
And a lot of people don't realize, I get a lot of people that call, you know, they'll call 911 and they, you know, they have all this going on. I believe somebody has a little background noise. Not, I don't think it's you, Sheriff Ennis.
No, ma'am.
Maybe my other people might have it. But I try to tell, you know, people I speak with and try to keep my radio show going towards as a platform for everyone and just to put our voices out there and be heard. And I know I met one of your officers yesterday while I was at work, and he was one of your canines. And I was tickled because he came in, he came in to where I do the lunches on the school buses right now, and I spoke to him a little bit, and we talked about the fact that police officers do need to stay in the school system. But we're going to continue this conversation in a minute. You're listening to Live with Liza on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
I want to feel the heat with somebody. Yeah, I want to dance with somebody. With somebody who loves me. Ooh, ooh.
Alexa, play Whitney Houston.
Okay.
The
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get access to over 50 million songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Blog Talk Radio.
Required listening with Amazon Music.
Dad music again?
The greatest guitarist of all time.
Wait, who?
Alexa, add this song to a new playlist.
Sure, what's the new playlist name?
Jack's Intro to Classic Rock.
Adding Stepping Stone by Jimi Hendrix to Jack's Intro to Classic Rock playlist.
Amazon Music, the simplest way to listen to the music you and soon he will love. New customers start your 30-day free trial at amazonmusic.com. Renews automatically. Cancel anytime.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Live with Liza. I air every Friday morning. It's from 9:30 in the morning till 10:30, and I rebroadcast weekly from at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the bachelornews.airtime.pro. I also have on the line Chief Keith Humphrey and Chief Virgil Green. Their show is You and the Law, and they air every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at blocktalkradio.com/LABachelor. And at 646-929-0130. And you can catch their rebroadcast at 4 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Pro. I also have on the line our sheriff here in Cumberland County, which I'm glad that he called in. And I'd like to introduce you to my other guest, which is Chief Virgil Green and Chief Keith Humphrey. And they're in other states, and they're also dealing with, you know, all the stuff that's going on with the police, the policing right now. And I like to get, like, different point of views across, and I like to get positive stuff for the people that are listening so that I can try to deter some of the negative that's going on right now with policing. And as I was asking, we spoke all earlier, Chief Humphrey and Chief Green, about what they said about how they felt the defunding and what kind of plans they have moving forward. So, Chief Green, how are you handling in your area better training for your officers with everything going on?
Well, first I want to say good morning to the sheriff, pleasure to meet you over the airways, sir.
Good to meet you, sir.
But
I'll tell you,
everything is always revolves around training. So the more training you can get to your officers, that's going to help them. But it has to also be some training that has some substance to it, and not just some kind of training where officers go and they just sit in the room for 4 hours or 6 hours or 8 hours and they walk away and say, oh, I got my, hours that I need for my training. But it has to have some substance to it. But that also, you know, goes into the conversation with when you're talking about defunding. Now, all of a sudden, if you have, over $500,000 taken out of your budget, now a lot of that your training may go away. So, again, people are not thinking about the other impacts of taking away funds from a police department budget that is already tight. Just like the sheriff said, their budget comes from county commissioners. Municipal budgets come from city, from municipal government. So, and the people that sit on these city councils or county commissioners, sometimes they often have their own agendas. But at the end of the day, they're citizens. So whatever decision they make is going to impact them. So they need to think broader about saying that we're going to defund, and they need to look at ways of actually increasing the funding, especially when it comes to training police officers. So when you're talking about, racial bias training, are you talking about implicit bias training? All those things, if you're not doing them, and if you are doing them, you need to kind of take it to another level so these officers can, where they can understand more about their biases and how they can improve how they deal with their citizens.
Right, and I wanted you guys to come on my show, and like I said, I listen to your show, periodically on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. when you come on the Blog Talk Radio. And I just wanted to bring y'all on. I know you, Chief Humphreys, in Little Rock, Arkansas, and Chief Green, you're in Oklahoma City, and we're here in Fayetteville, North Carolina, in Cumberland County. And I'm listening to all of you guys talk, and all our budgets come, every state has a different way of budgeting stuff. So it's kind of like a wow moment right now for me because, you know, you don't think about how other states are doing it, and yet and still the nation is talking about defunding the police. It's not just one area or one city or one state. It's like everybody wants to defund, but you don't even know where the funding's coming from. So here in Cumberland County, we have a different way here in North Carolina than you guys might get your funding. Is that not correct,
yeah.
Sheriff?
Yes. Yes. But it's just like he said, he's in the city, and their city council, you know, they vote on their budgets, like he just said. And we have the county commissioners here that, you know, vote on our budgets, just like he said. And I have
but
to agree
it's not
with
across,
what he said.
Right, it's not across the – it's not something – like, they want to defund the police across the board. You know, like, everybody's – that's all you hear now is this defund. But they don't realize even how much money each budget gets. Every budget gets different amounts of money. And when you defund, like he said, if you lose $1 million out of your budget, how is that even going to represent us? So I want, you know, Sheriff Ennis, I wanted you to also, you know, I know that you came on my show, and I'm very thankful to have you as my guest. But speaking to my Cumberland County listeners here in Fayetteville, North Carolina, I just want to give you that platform to tell us, you know, how you feel and, you know, all the positive that you have for our county where there's so much negative that's being put out there. Like, a lot of people are against the Black Lives Matter that we have painted around the Market House. The people that are sleeping there, camping out there right now. You know, how are you, how do you feel about that part as far as it being done to our city? Like, I don't know if we're just following suit and having that painted. It's like one city did it and everybody's doing it. What are your feelings on that?
Well, you know, my feelings on that is, you know, everybody has a right to protest. You have a right to do it, but do it peacefully without destroying people's property. But at the same time, you have to, when you start protesting and you start setting up to do things, you have to make sure you know what you're doing. You have to read before you come out and you start doing it. Know the laws before you start doing it, because sometimes it'll get yourself in trouble if you don't know the law that before you start, you're getting out here protesting. You know, now what these folks are wanting, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in 2 weeks. It's not going to happen in a month. You know, there's a way about doing things, and you have to look at that before you act. You know, that's what I like to say to these young people. Think about it before you do. Just like I tell my officers, think about before you act. Now, these young folks at the Market House, they have the right to protest, but I think, you know, you need to think about it. There's a better way sometimes to go about things and get your message across to folks where you don't have folks that were with you and now are starting to go against you, you know. So
right, because I just don't see what the point of you sleeping at the Market House has anything to do with, you know, what's like the reality of stuff is. And I tell people, you know, I like to say chew your words before you spit them out. Because sometimes what you say may not come out the way you were thinking it. So you got to let those words kind of marinate before you spit them out. And I've watched, you know, I watch our local news. I watch the news that are from other states. And I look into different, you know, different points of view and, you know, what people are saying and stuff like that. And I disagree with a lot, and I agree with a lot, but we have that right, and that's what people need to understand. It's okay to disagree. It's okay to agree. I mean, that's what makes us America. It makes us America because we have different point of views that can come together and create greatness.
Right.
You know, you have different scientists. It takes more than one scientist to find a cure. Because one scientist going to bring something in, another one going to bring something in, and then we have a cure. We're not going to get a cure from just one person doing this, another person going against that person, instead of bringing to the table what you have to bring. And I had on my first show, I had Representative Adams on the show, and he was saying the same thing. I really got that part from him where he said, we all need to bring stuff to the table. And then we need to all look at what can we bring from that.
Correct.
Not turn against each other because of what we bring to the table. It just, you know, and it doesn't make any sense. And that's why I'm grateful to have this platform to share and encourage people to use their voice. You know, I think I have our producer on the line. He wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, I'll just be very brief for you. And good morning to your guests and those listening on the show. And it's a great show. I just wanted to just say two quick things and get out of your way. The first thing is that I think sometimes we need to be careful when we use words. Words can be very misconstrued. And the other side likes to use the word defund, and it scares the bejesus out of people. Sometimes defund means rearrange. So it's not necessarily people just taking money and getting rid of the police. So we have to be careful when we use that term defund. And it's on a city-by-city, it's my understanding, basis. A lot of agencies are looking at it. And the second thing is we also have to remember that Black America's tired. We don't want to hear it takes time anymore. We don't want to hear it. It's too many people dying. And work within the system, whatever. The system's broken. That's why we're out there protesting. So with all due respect, you know, we want people to be patient, but, hell, we've been patient for 400-plus years. But when's enough enough?
But that – thank you for coming on. I agree with you, but then I also agree with my sheriff here, because it's not so much – he's not saying that we need more time to make changes. He's just saying that change is going to come, but change is going to have to come differently, because right now what made this really put light to it was George Floyd. But he wasn't the first one, and he definitely, as we know, wasn't the last one. So we have to realize, I think what my sheriff is saying is that we're gonna see change, but it's going to take the time for that change to happen, because we're just now, even though it happened for 400 years, we're just now getting that media in it. We're just now getting video. Didn't nobody believe the stuff was going on? Just like I was saying, when I went to my director and told him that I saw my class here in our county, I'm a teacher's assistant, and I saw the teacher treating the black kids different. This person who's white told me, I don't believe you. So I had to take it a few steps further, and I'm still taking it further, because I know what my eyes saw, and I know what documentation I had. But we get that now it's more video. So, you know, Sheriff Ennis, you know, I'm with you on that. We're going to see change within time. It's
right.
Just not going to come as quick as people want it to come. People want it to come overnight.
It's not going to happen overnight.
So I agree with you, sir, on that part. Go ahead.
Well, Liza, I'll say this. I think when you go back and you look at, go back and look at almost 30 years ago when we had the citizen with the home video camera who recorded the Rodney King incident.
Right.
So you had, we didn't even, you know, cell phones were out, but this person had the old VHS-1 camera, and they recorded that incident with Rodney King. So,
but that goes back to what you were saying, that there's no consistency. That goes back to what you were saying. We see it happen, we do a little bit, and then we sit down. It's like we get pacified. We get comfortable. There's no room for getting comfortable no more. There's no room for saying, okay, we're going to wait. We understand that. But you like you said, one of you guys said that people get comfortable in it, and they're like, oh, okay, we're straight. We're going to wait. And then something else happens. You know, now what we need to do is not get comfortable. If we stay uncomfortable, they're going to be uncomfortable.
Well, and I'll say this, and I think it just kind of goes – go ahead, Keith.
Well, I was going to say this, Chief Humphrey. Sheriff, I'm also honored to meet you via phone, and thank you for your job.
Thank you. Same here.
I just want to say this. I think no matter what happens, I think people still trust the police. And I think what happens is when they hear police chiefs stand up in front of them, especially in situations of a large magnitude, and say, we will make change, this is what we do, I think there's still some hope. people, especially in the African American community, that believe that police chief, that still believe in law enforcement. Right. And so, you know, we did have the Rodney King situation, but what happened? People gave us a walk on that. We've had several other incidents and people giving us a walk on that. And so we continue to get passes. And so I think at this point, I think our passes are running out. I think our passes are starting to run out, and we're going to start hearing more demands and expecting more. People are going to start expecting more from at least police chiefs. That's why you're seeing police chiefs leave. That's why you're seeing police chiefs, police chief jobs coming open throughout the nation, because there is a lot of pressure on police chiefs to perform and hold their people accountable.
Chief, can you hold that thought? Can you hold that thought for 1 second? We're going to take this last break right quick, and you're listening to Live with Liza on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
You know, before Boost, our phone bill was obscene. So we switched to Boost and got lines for the whole family with unlimited gigs for a much more family-friendly price. It's nice to have a phone bill that doesn't require parental controls.
Your family deserves better. Get four lines for only $25 per line, each with unlimited gigs. Plus, get up to four free Samsung J7 perks with 6 months of Hulu, where you can stream all the shows everyone is talking about. All on the super reliable and super fast nationwide network. Boost makes it easy to switch. Switching makes it easy to save.
Since Buffalo Wild Wings is always open late, here are a few things you'll enjoy. Buzzer beaters, wings in 21 signature sauces and seasonings, and great deals on food and beer. Grab select domestic draft beers starting at $4. $4 shareables like street tacos, fried pickles, chili queso dip, mozzarella sticks, and roasted garlic mushrooms, and deals on select liquor and house cocktails. Phew, that's a mouthful. Catch all of the late night action. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Offers and participation vary. Please drink responsibly. Void where prohibited.
You're listening to Live with Liza. I air every Friday morning at 9:30 in the morning Eastern Standard Time. I rebroadcast every week on weekly at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time at the Bachelor News Radio. Airtime.pro. I also have on the line You and the Law with their co-host Chief Keith Humphrey and Chief Virgil Green. Their show airs every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at blogtalkradio.com, LA/LA Bachelor, and at 646-929-0130, and their rebroadcast is every morning at 4 a.m. and every afternoon at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at thebachelornews.airtime.pro. I also have on the line my local sheriff. We only have a few minutes left, so I know we have to kind of wrap it up, you know, and I look forward to maybe some more interviews with you guys. Sheriff Ennis, I'm going to go ahead and let you take the last couple of minutes and, you know, giving you the platform to tell our citizens here in Cumberland County that you are keeping us safe and that you don't, you know, you're not going anywhere.
No, Liza, we're here. The sheriff's office is going to be here to protect the citizens and answer call. But at the same time, Liza, what Chief said, piggyback on what Chief said before we left, you know, we have more than just chiefs. We have more than just sheriffs leaving this field. You got officers leaving this field, young officers now, doesn't want to work this field because they didn't get in this field, you know, to receive what they're receiving now. They got in the field to help folks. So a lot of them are leaving. But at the same time, I hear my young folks talking, and I'm a big proponent of if you want to make a difference, get in this game, put a uniform on. Put a uniform on. You know, it's a shame that my agency, that I'm out here working hard to recruit minorities in this field. You can make a change if you get in this field. Because one day myself and these chiefs are going to be gone. So someone's going to have to fill our spot. Someone's going to have to come up. And you can make a difference when you get involved. You know? Of course, yeah, protesting and going, that's good. But somebody's got to fill these ranks.
So basically, ranks, sir,
you can make a difference.
They need to be part. They need to be part of the change. Stop just talking about it and become part of the change. And I'm thankful that you came on the air. I know my time is running down, and you're welcome to come any morning, excuse me, or any show and speak and voice your opinion. I appreciate it. Again, you're listening to Live with Liza on the Bachelor News Radio. Mm-hmm.